Mr. Gay 1, going Wheel 3. Mr. Gay, how did you know of the British surrender?
Well, it just some other knew that I think it was through the radio, I think. Through the radio, and we were asked to, well, by people, and to put up the Japanese flags and safer, better to put up the flags so that there wouldn't be any trouble. And people started looting. The shops were being looted, and in fact, everybody went in and took things as if it was free. So in fact, I remember I did go in and got a few tins of milk, because everybody seemed to help himself with something, himself or herself with something or other. And some even bring their trolleys to take back bags of rice and such things. Yeah.
Do you remember roughly when did you hear the news from the other people that the British had surrendered?
Not hearing the news, it just when the looting started and so on, it just happened that we knew. Yeah? No special announcement that it was specifically that you in words and so on, but we just knew that it was the end. I, of course, knew that the British had already left, that the posts of the civil defense had been deserted, because I was one of them who left the post, because when I went to report for duty, there was nobody. The place was empty. Empty desks, pieces of paper, everything was taken away. Eh? No papers were of no use, no information was there. Everything was obviously somebody responsible had taken all the valuable information, whatever there was, away with him or destroyed them. So I knew that there was the end. And I had some rumors, somebody saying that the volunteers had discarded their uniforms and went into hiding. And people began to take their bicycles and things and hide in the attic. Japanese soldiers had been stopping people wherever they saw them riding bicycles, and wherever they saw them, to get their fountain pens, watches, whatever they possessed that were useful to them would be just taken away from them without asking. That's all.
Did you witness all this, or did you hear about them?
I heard about them. Because when I heard about them, I took care of my family and my own things. I began to take those things and I dismantled I hid my radio. I also heard that it was dangerous to possess a radio and listen to BBC news or news broadcast other than well, news broadcast, you see. Any news broadcast would be dangerous. So I began to hide. And later I brought them out to have them sealed by the Hosobu, the Broadcasting Corporation of Nippon, of the Japanese occupation.
You mentioned about the looting. In which places were there looting?
All over the place. Only it spreads. It spread from the rural, from the areas where the Japanese hadn't settled or hadn't had the orders to be very strict with the people. But when they had the command that this looting must stop, the people actually stopped. And it did stop when the people foolishly or unaware of it began to loot the Japanese stores. What the Japanese had taken or kept, or the things that they regarded as quite valuable to them for their own use, the people started to loot on a large scale. The Japanese arrested some of them, beheaded them, exhibited their heads, and wrote in whether Japanese or Chinese characters, whether Japanese or Chinese characters looked the same, at least to me. Yeah, it immediately stopped and was very effective. And the very next day, looting, there was no more looting.
Do you remember when this occurred?
I can't remember the exact date. It was a matter of 2 days from the beginning of the looting. So order was restored pretty quickly and with these drastic measures.
Did you see where these heads were exhibited?
Yes. The ones I saw were at Kallang Bridge. I saw 3 or 4 of them, and it was quite a horrible sight.
Did you know whether they were Chinese or other races?
No, they were rather darkened. I couldn't recognize. They looked, to me, Asian, and rather more like, I can't say.
You mentioned that there was looting in your area. Where was that specifically?
Geylang area. Possibly Geylang area.
Were these provision shops or residents?
No, looting. Oh, they are from, in my case, it was the shop just opposite my house, opposite the shop house, the terrace house in which I was staying. The usual Teochew provisions shop, where they store all kinds of foodstuffs and provisions for the family use. But they have got a lot of stuff. Powdered milk and all sorts of tin food and so on.
In that area, was that the only shop that was being looted?
No, quite a lot of other shops too. But by the time I was aware of it, those other shops had all been bare by the looting.
Who were these looters? Were they from the same area? Did they come from elsewhere?
Some of them came from quite a distance because they knew about it, and we, being of the teaching class and so on, were quite slow in the uptake. Whereas these people, when they knew about it, they took the opportunity of going around hunting for shops. And the owners just couldn't do anything about it.
Were the owners in the shops?
I have no idea, but they even if they were in the shops, they just couldn't do anything.
So, did the Japanese army ever go to that area, Geylang, to stop all this?
No, at that time, during the first few days of the occupation, I believe they were too busy in the more important areas, getting the more important things done, rather than in these small areas taking care of these small things. But their idea was to do something big and show them once and for all, and tell them, if you continue to do this sort of thing, if we catch you, this sort of thing will happen to you. We are not going to chase you all around like cat chasing mice. We show you this will happen. If you continue doing it, we'll hunt you. But we just tell you, you will lose your head. They're good in this sort of thing. They don't have to, just catch you, fine you, and do things prolong and protract the a kind of punishment to teach you to do the right thing. They just, with one stroke, they give you the ultimatum and the punishment and teach you once and for all.
Did you know whether there was any kind of victory parades that the Japanese had once they entered Singapore?
No, I don't think so. They perhaps had it somewhere else, but in their own country, but in Singapore, I don't think they had that. Because you were busy in other areas. You were busy consolidating and preparing to meet the other areas to fight American and forces, naval forces and so on, Philippines and other places.
What were your feelings when you knew that the British had surrendered?
Oh, the first, naturally there was a feeling of fear, and we really did not know what would happen. But we were thinking of all those stories of brutality of the soldiers and the way they would use force on the women and so on. And so we had, my wife was young and we had three sisters. And so we were quite scared. And later they did have patrols. They did go around, they say. They did go around and checking. And the house which they checked would have, they would write something on the door. Whenever they have checked the house, they would write some characters. We knew nothing about what they wrote. They just wrote on the door. And sometimes they would come and borrow sandals and such things. And they would go upstairs and examine. And I remember my wife faced them, but my sisters-in-law, they hid under the bed, quiet as mice, so scared. And they would look around to see. And there were cases where it did happen, where some of the soldiers, whatever they did, we didn't know. We had no direct evidence, but. We did hear, but on the whole, it was not too bad. But we were scared. We were really afraid. In time of war, such things would happen and did happen.
Were there any kind of preparations that you made for the Japanese occupation of Singapore during that time?
No, we never thought the British would surrender so easily. We never thought. We thought at least Singapore would hold. You see. And when the reports and the Prince of Wales came, and then the hurricane fighters were sent to protect Singapore, we thought that the Japanese bombers would be shot down, just like the Spitfires shot down the German bombers. But in just a matter of weeks, we found that that was not to be the case. The Japanese just wiped them away. And soon the British surrendered. And then we were really fearful. We really realized that it was serious. And you are facing somebody unknown. Except that the Japanese were Oriental people, and we also had some Japanese friends in school. Like I had some classmates who were Japanese. In fact, one of them did come back, son of a dentist, Sotada. He came back as an officer, but I didn't know. You see. And some of them, of course, if they met us, they might recognize us, but in it was not possible to meet, you see. But they did come back. Obviously, when they were here, they did a lot of investigation, recording, and looking around, and digging down things, facts, spying for the Japanese government. So that when they came, they knew exactly where to go, what to do, what to look for.
Were you aware of all that when you were with them before the war started?
Oh, people knew that some of them opened up stores here as a front, because they were selling things that were pretty cheap, 10 cent stores, and some shops selling cloth and things and so on. Sometimes they gave away at actually give away prices at times, and we knew there were dentists and photographers. Profession was very common. There were many photography shops that belonged to the Japanese, and it's quite obvious that could serve a double purpose.
At that time, how did all of you react to all those?
Nothing. The British authorities, I suppose, but British authorities knew very well what they were doing. So we, as civilians, we just took them as part of business colleagues and so on, in doing business. The Chinese businessmen just did business with them, and they were very polite and very efficient, very good. The Japanese dentists were always better than the local dentists, because they were well qualified. They used the latest methods and so on. I went to Japanese dentists, and many people went to Japanese dentists.
During the first few days after the surrender, did you come into any contact with Japanese soldiers?
Yes, but they spoke Japanese, and we couldn't understand Japanese.
Under what circumstances did you see them?
They came and they obviously now I understand they come. Just out of curiosity, they wanted to see the family. I suppose they were hunting for young girls or something. I wouldn't know. But they came to look for bicycles as well, and things, certain things that they might confiscate and use for themselves, or see what kind of life we were living and what we might have available. But fortunately, they were not the ruffians that we usually associate with infantry.
What were your impressions of these soldiers? How did they look to you?
In our case, they were stationed to keep order. They were a few in a group at a time, and not too bad. They are not the people sent to the battlefront. I suppose if you met those who were combat troops, they might be fierce, as some people met them, and it could be fierce. But I was told that these people have their comfort houses and so on to comfort them, so that gives them an outlet. Otherwise, they might go wild, And some who happened to be in the way, in the far off places, the village girls and so on, do get to see the sorrow, and they go to run for their lives and hide in the jungle for days. For example, I remember one girl coming out to tell me the story that she had to hid, and she practically starved for 2 days before she dared to come out.
Which part of Geylang did the Japanese station themselves?
I mean, quite a lot of places. In my place, it was East Coast Road, and around the Siglap area, one group, and then various groups. And they just go around the sentry duty, and they have a small group here, a small group there, and they keep on changing. They're very, very good for this kind of thing. And when they set a net like that, you just can't get through. And whenever you cross a roadblock, if you happen to be cycling or passing by, you must stop, dismount, bow, pass them, bow again, mount and pass. If you don't do that, you'll be detained, get a step. In front of everybody, you get two tight slaps. And that's a lucky thing. You might get worse than just a mere slapping. And they just don't do that to us. They do that to their own people. Because sentry on guard duty is actually quite above, even a very high-ranking officer. It seems that he represents the army authority of that area, and you don't respect him, means you are disrespecting the authority of that commanding officer in that area. He has got the authority to stop you and check you, so therefore you got to stop. Give him a chance to let you pass or check you.
Earlier you mentioned about the patrolling and writing of some characters on the wall, on the doors after they have checked their place. When did that occur?
Yeah, I don't know the date. It's only within the period of the time when they have come for some time.
During those times that they went around for those on patrol, did they ask for any particulars of the family or just looking in?
No, you just look on. And you see, later when the city government, they form where we have got our city council, city hall, when they form the special city government, where Mr. Shinozaki is one of them. Shinozaki was in charge of the education department, and the others were in charge of various departments. Then they started calling back all the government services, and based on the health, medical, health and medical department, very important, supply department, and PUB, all the essential services. Then they issue all these people who work with special armbands or special pieces of paper on which they write and chalk, very important. And so with these, gradually things settle down. Then they only post sentries. No more, these soldiers were no more allowed to wander about. The first time, I suppose, they wandered about, they were afraid of snipers, and especially quite possibly they might be looking for European soldiers who might be hiding. More that than examining Asians. Maybe they were also looking for Asian volunteers, but the volunteers had already hidden their uniforms. I already hid my uniform. My wife hid my civil defense uniform, all the badges all gone. All my helmet, don't know where, my helmet was right in the garret. Even till now, if you examine the house, if it's not demolished by now, it might be in the garret, still my tin hat. Yeah? We were scared, our uniforms and boots and so on disappeared overnight.
So the patrolling done by the Japanese soldiers were in the very beginning of the occupation period?
Very beginning of the occupation period. When things were settled and when passes and so on of one kind or other in the form of armbands and permits and so on, letters and so on. I later had a letter from Mr. Shinozaki saying I was headmaster, and even later he wrote one indicating there were, as a joke I suppose, that I was like his adopted son. He's very sentimental, you see. Because I used to sing for him, and that protected me all throughout my occupation later in Endow. And so that kind of thing helped us to get along. Whenever they came and we got scared, we just showed that, and they smiled, they laughed. They looked at the thing, they laughed. I did not know why they laughed, but they laughed. When I asked somebody, they said this. It was probably they looked at the thing and they recognized it as with some sense of humor that it was a Japanese joke or something of the sort, is it? Like something who likes somebody says this kind of thing. It's not serious. So that's the thing, and everything got settled down. That was it. But then things were not so rosy as it looked. Still, there was this lookout for traitors, or people whom they thought were traitors. They were still looking out for evidence, and they were still taking people and torturing them. And the people who did that were the Kempeitais. And nobody would know who would tell of whom. And that would bring us to another part of the story of one of the reasons why we went to Andang.
In the beginning, the Japanese rounded up the Chinese into certain concentration centers.
Yes.
Were you being asked to go to one of those also?
You see, if I had stayed at my place, whether I liked it or not, at that time we were not given those passes, and so it was in the quite early days. At that time, they would just go to a house and say, all of you, all the men, they suddenly noticed. They just had to say, and if you didn't go, the next time they come around with the soldiers with a bayonet, you would get scared. The first time they ask you to go, you wouldn't go. The second time they come and say, why don't you go? And with that, just a bayonet, they say, up the lorry. They might not take you there this time, might take you somewhere else. You see what I mean? And that was so when people heard of that once or twice, and they already heard before that there were people who were shot somewhere for disobedience, that the first time any notice came out, that their wives and home people specially packed food and water and so on, like going for a picnic, ready. They knew that they might be detained for a day or two, for their husbands or for the young men to take to these places of concentration. So voluntarily, these people went without second asking.
Did you remember when did the notice come out?
That's why I can't remember all these days. I can't remember. I should have kept a diary. I can't. But those were in the early days, as I said before, before the civil government were organized.
Do you remember what the notice said? Was everybody asked to go, or only the mayors?
Only the mayors. On the mill, it was about remains. You see, this kind of thing, it was written in Japanese, and somebody would tell somebody, and somebody would tell somebody, and you just see streams of people going. They say, you have to go, you must go, you must go. I say, don't play, you must go. So you go, I go. And then you say, oh, I say, everybody going, you don't have to go. No, I see, you have to go. And you hear stories, you get scared. And of course, when I didn't hear these things, you see. As I said already, I was out of this. Honey, I didn't know how serious it was, because when these people all went, I was the other side, you see. But when I came out thinking that it was my turn, my area to go, they were all coming back. They said, we have all gone. They're coming back. Then I heard tales. That not all came back.
You were not in your house when the rounding up took place?
No. I was staying with my friend's house, in my friend's house.
Where was your friend staying?
Jalan Yunus, near Jalan Yunus area.
So why were you not asked to join the crowd?
I don't know.